Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
¡Wow! Gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam! ¡Mua!
Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. So today I have my good friend Tamika here with me. We're going to be reviewing Beverly Hills Cop 2. But you know what? I'm just glad that she's here and not Max, because Max just fucks it up for everybody. So, you know, I'm just glad that she's here to be able to review this movie with me. So let's go on ahead. Let's review this movie. Hey, what's going on, Tamika?
You know.
So, how have you been doing?
I'm doing fine. It's a hot mess over here because I got the dishwasher gone and my phone is somewhere, so you'll probably hear my ring cam. But other than that, I'm fine.
That's good. That's fantastic. It's always good to have you back here on the show talking about some movies here. We did Terminator. We actually did Terminator a couple of months back.
Yeah.
And now we're doing Beverly Hills Cop 2. Zoe did Beverly Hills Cop 1 with me back in October. And now we decided to follow it up with doing a part 2, part 3, and then when part 4 comes out, Tamika's going to be joining me for that. So,
yes.
So let's go on ahead. Let's talk about it. So, my question is this. Whenever you look at Beverly Hills Cop, when was like the very first time that you've seen Beverly Hills Cop 2, and how would you rate that nostalgically going in, how it made you feel nostalgically? Just watching the film at a young Tamika.
This is kind of embarrassing, but I don't remember watching it as a kid because, you know, I couldn't watch movies with curse words in them. So this is probably like the first time as an adult that I really sat down and watched Beverly Hills Cop like the whole way through.
But how did it make you feel nostalgically when you were watching it, the edited version?
This is embarrassing. This is like the very first time as an adult I am watching Beverly Hills Cop.
And oh, cool.
I don't have my parents going, cover your ears, they're cursing.
Which is the whole entire movie, but.
Yeah. I mean, you could do a drinking game with how many F-bombs Axel does.
Right? But okay, for me nostalgically, remember seeing the cover, seeing the logo for Beverly Hills Cop, the very first one, seeing it on VHS over at Walmart, and also to a Blockbuster, even Beverly Hills Cop 2, a Blockbuster and a Walmart for VHS. And I remember my dad was in the hospital and it was on Comedy Central and they had like the edited version of Beverly Hills Cop 2. And so I ended up watching Beverly Hills Cop 2 in the hospital with my dad, the edited version on Comedy Central.
Huh.
A couple of years later, I ended up, as a teenager, I also watched it unedited, and stuff like that. For me, nostalgically, I would have to give this at least a 6.5 out of 10.
Oh, interesting.
Because of the fact that I think that the first one is just holds a higher value. To me, nostalgically, I would have to say that was at least a 7.5 out of 10 for me. This is at least a 6.5 for me, nostalgically. And that's how I feel about it nostalgically. But now we're going to go on his strip away from the nostalgic aspect to it and go into it as an adult with our adult lenses on. Of course, you've seen it with fresh eyes, though, now. So,
yes. I guess. But, you're very mature now.
Yes. Some of us are. So, that being said... Hey there, movie buffs. Welcome to another episode of Movie Lovers Night. I'm your host, John, and joining me, as always, is my partner in podcasting crime, Tamika. And so, like I said, we're going to be talking about Beverly Hills Cop scene by scene and talking about this nostalgic and non-nostalgically. So, it opens up with basically a jewel heist that winds up happening at the very start of it. You have... Drago's wife robbing the place from Rocky. And I thought the opening scene works. I mean, it sets up a lot of stuff that happens within the second movie itself. And I just thought that the sequence of her shooting up the jewelry store was really, really good. I thought that the action sequences for that and then her stealing the jewelry and then leaving this note behind saying that they're the alphabet killers. So... what did you think of that opening scene?
So my new phrase is eat the floor, because that's what she kept saying, eat the floor. And I've never heard anybody that robbed a bank tell anybody to eat the floor. So, yeah, other than that, it was a pretty good opening to a movie. You know, just her coming out and... the guy just getting distracted by her. It was kind of like a Sharon Stone moment where she opened her legs.
It does, demo. Yeah. It definitely does have like a Sharon Stone kind of vibe to her, though. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And the guy got fascinated with her, which made it easy for her to overtake the doorman to the bank.
Right.
Like, come on, man. How many tall blondes are in California?
They're all over the place, according to...
And what makes this one so special that he get distracted from his job? That's what I want to know.
Well, I do have a fan theory.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so basically this is actually Drago's wife, right? So after Drago lost to Rocky and Russia, Ludmila Volbit decided to leave Russia and Drago behind and move to Beverly Hills and change her name to Carla Fry, the alphabet killer. She was so furious at her husband for losing the fight with Rocky that she decided she needed to make her own money by robbing jewelry stores and horse races. She wanted to prove to Drago that she didn't need a man to take care of her. That's my fan theory.
I don't need a man. I'm going to rob a bank.
Right? I'm just going to get my jewels, get some money from the horse races, and, you know, just prove to Drago I don't need him.
Oh, the feminist movement just got set back.
So after that jewel heist, you have Beverly Hills Police Department Captain Andrew Baumel, Detective Billy Rosewood, and Sergeant John Taggart are trying to figure out who is behind the alphabet crimes, a series of mostly high-end store robbing distinguished by their... monogrammed envelopes with an alphabet sequence and the S lines leave behind. Obliquity Matters is the new political state of the Beverly Hills Police Department, headed by incompetent intelligence and verbally abusive new police chief Harold Lutz, who is doing everything he can to stay on Mayor Ted Egan's good side. So you can definitely tell that there's a lot of politics involved in this. Even Rosewood and Taggart are actually taken back with this because of the fact it's like, now we have to be careful not to offend our new chief of police and not to piss him off. And we can't even do our job the way that we intended because he's busy kissing the mayor's ass. And everything's about the mayor. I was like, who gives a shit about this mayor? He doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about anybody. But you're going to go on ahead and kiss the mayor's ass. And then also, too, you have Rosewood, who's trying to do his job.
Yeah.
Because his boss told him to basically investigate this truck, but he didn't give him the okay to call the FBI. But what did you think of the opening sequence? for that part.
That's the age-old question. Why do we kiss the mayor's butt? He doesn't give a shit about us. Right? No. Why do we still do it? Can't answer that question tonight. But I think it was great seeing them again. Just that energy that Rosewood and Taggart has. Well, we didn't see Taggart yet. Mm-hmm.
That whole entire... Yeah, I know what you're saying. Basically, that energy that Rosewood has.
Yeah. Yeah, because he wasn't in the end of Beverly Hills Cop 1, right? He didn't show up. He did. Okay,
yeah, because Rosewood, and just remember when Axel checks himself out of the hotel, Rosewood is there, and so is Tigger.
Ah,
at the very end of it.
Okay.
So there's that, but also another thing. No, it's cool. But no, another thing too that I thought that was really funny was, you know, you could definitely tell Rosewood is definitely getting into where he's acting like Axel. This whole entire time, even when Axel's not there, it's like he left a mark on Rosewood so much that he just doesn't care about anything anymore. He just is bluntly telling the police captain off. He's telling him what he thinks, and he just doesn't care. And I'm like, yeah, I'm getting a little bit of a vibe of Rosewood picking up some stuff from Axel from the very first movie. And standing up for himself versus how he was in the first movie, where he's kind of taken back a little bit, trying to do everything by the book.
Yeah.
But you can definitely tell in this one, he's doing exactly like Axel, trying to be like Axel a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when a police captain or commissioner, whatever he is, mispronounced his name. He's like, no, my name is Rosewood, not Roseweed. Get it right. And don't tell me to shut up. You know, just like the tit for tat, all this he got going on. And I was like, oh, okay. Just the way he adjusted himself, like he was really irritated. And the old Rose would have just put his head down and been like, okay, yes, sir. And Taggart is still, this Taggart switched places with Rosewood in a sense, because Taggart is like, yes, sir, shut up. Oh my gosh.
Well, Taggart was always by the book in a sense. You know, he's like, and especially in the first one, he was basically a hard ass. Mm-hmm. He was always taking things seriously and stuff like that. And Rosewood was always the silly one anyways for his partner in a sense when it was just the two of them. But, you know, basically he was actually the hard ass. Rosewood was lenient, but not to the point where he is now in the second one. You know? Mm-hmm, so that's how I see them now, where they switch roles, where basically you have Rosewood, who's now over the top, who can't keep his mouth shut, while also you have Taggart, who's trying to still be by the book, and he's also going through a divorce now. He's going through some family hard times and things like that, too. And, yeah.
Yeah, they just got together in the first movie, and now it's a divorce in the second one. And of course, Rosewood is there to bring it up. Like, I'm so glad she, you know, left and she's doing great things for herself. He's like, okay, Rosewood, just calm down. You don't talk about my wife like that.
And my 3 or 4 kids that I have, you don't have to be talking about them. Why did you have to bring them up?
Yeah, and he's like, on the wife's side. I'm like, come on. That's supposed to be your boy.
Right. He's over there just ratting him out.
My God, it's terrible.
But I do like how basically the captain winds up saying, well, winds up making them now be beef cops now instead of detectives. Mm-hmm. And so now they're no longer detectives anymore. Now they're beef cops. And after that, you actually see on the way home that Bogomil is shot and injured by Caleb Fry, the chief henchman and fiance of Maxwell Dent, finding out about the shooting over a news report. Detroit Police Department Detective Axel Foley abandons his undercover duties and then immediately flies out to Beverly Hills to find out who shot Taggart and Rosewood agree to assist Axel because of Lewitt's attempts to find an excuse to get them fired. But also, too, before that happens, you actually see Axel. He's getting dressed up. He's a police detective now. He's no longer... He looks like he's just dressed up like a regular police detective, but it comes to find out he's actually just undercover. He has a Ferrari. Mm-hmm. He's also trying to hustle everybody again, trying to get credit cards. And the guy's like, look, man, I can't get you that at fast. He goes, what do you mean you can't get me that fast? I want it in 3 hours. You got to give me these credit cards, man. What the fuck do you think you're doing?
Yeah. and it wasn't hard for him either because he used to be a hustler before he was a cop.
Right.
Or he know the lingo.
So you have that going on. And then you also have, after he winds up finding out during his undercover job that Bug Mail winds up getting shot. So he's like, oh, I need to check on this guy and see how he's doing. He even calls up the police department to find out how he's doing over there. And it's funny that the secretary even knows who Axel is. Oh, Axel, yeah, we heard all about you. And he goes, yeah, just put me through to Bugmail's wife so I know what's going on with her, with him. And that's when he was like, look, I got to go. And he winds up, the guy who was actually there winds up recognizing him. Oh, hey, you're from the cigarette thing that we did a couple months back. And he goes, man, I don't know what you're talking about. I wasn't selling those cigarettes. Yes, you were. And he goes, nah, I don't know what you're talking about. You're a cop.
I smell a pee. I used to be Muslim. I know port when I smell it. What? I want to be like Axel Foley because he talks his way out of anything.
He really can. Like, he's a smooth talker. He definitely knows how to talk himself out of a situation. Also, too, whenever... you know, he's saying, well, he's a cop. Well, that's my cousin. Well, your cousin's a cop.
Yeah.
There's no, he's not. He's not no cop. Trust me, he's not no cop. Well, he's got bad luck or something. Something's wrong with him. Yeah. He ain't right with him.
And then he checked me for a wire. He's like, I don't got no wire. He said, yes, you do. I ain't doing business with him because he bad luck. Goodbye. I was like, dang, he just left. What?
And crazy. Then he tries to get his police partner to pretend that he's him.
Yeah.
He goes, look, all I want you to do is just duck over here in the car and just be like this the whole time. So that way no one can recognize you.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's, what's that kind of name? Paul Ray?
Yeah.
We got his name. Paul. He's from Mad About You.
Yep.
And it was weird.
What do you think about him being in it?
Oh, yeah, he was good. They got some good comedic timing. It was just strange that he do black voices, and then I started to think about Robert De Niro, sorry. Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder.
Oh,
that's
what I thought about
when Paul Reiser, Fraser, whatever his name is, was doing the black voices.
You know what, though? I was thinking to myself like this. I'm like, well, it would have been cool to see Chris Rock switch roles with him and him be the tow truck driver.
That's tricky.
Well,
I feel like they can do
the valet guy.
Yeah, I feel like they can do either role.
Right.
But I wonder, was that Chris Rock's first role? I don't know, but it just kind of is amazing to see them young in their career and they're taking like these small roles. And if back then you would have thought, oh, you know, that guy was kind of funny, probably won't see him anymore. You know, and now it's like Chris Rock everywhere. It's just interesting how, like, these characters that have, like, one-liners in movies, you don't know what they could be. They could be a breakout star later on.
True. That's very true. But I thought that the whole entire thing about how Bookmail winds up getting shot, just trying to help somebody, and then, you know, next thing you know, he's inside the hospital and we don't know if he's going to live or not. So you have a little bit of an emotional attachment to a character that we cared about in the very first movie, hoping that he would survive it. And why would they actually go after this guy? This guy seems a very nice police officer. And here's this blonde woman shooting this guy. hands him a letter, then she shoots him.
Okay, so first, she is a wonderful decoy because apparently all the men forget. It's just that she's so tall and helpless, and men are tempted to help her with whatever, like the doorman when she dropped her purse and he had a gun in his face. And then Bogomel, he's like, oh my God, are you okay? And she had his like wig on. And she looked suspicious anyway. She looked like a Russian spy. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm helpless. Please help me with the car. And like you said, he like checking the oil and whatever. And then she was like, oh, Andrew, what do you think about this? And she like smacks a letter A or whatever on the
right.
Whatever. I don't know.
On the envelope. I was on the ransom envelope or whatever it yeah. was. And then
he's like, what? And then by the time that happened, he can shine.
It's just classic 80s, if you think about it though, when especially having like an alphabet killer, and stuff like that too. It's like, okay, we have to hunt this case of the alphabet killer. It's
understand that.
Very 80s trope.
Look like a villain.
Even with the wig on, she does look like a villain.
That Sia, you know, the singer Sia, she has a Sia wig on, the bangs, and then these 80s black glasses on, and they're all black.
But you know what, though? Like, if I was a cop, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to help someone that had engine issues, why would you have that veil over your eyes to try and figure out what's wrong with your car?
Oh, you mean like the glasses she had?
Yeah, like, yeah. Why would you? Right, you wouldn't want to work on a car, or look and see what's up with your car with your glasses on, especially that thing that Sia has.
Oh my God, I got you saying Sia now. But John is a helpless, tall woman. She's like intimidating.
Who's married to Drago?
She's like intimidated yet exotic. So all these men fall for her. That's why she's the perfect decoy. Because he got distracted. He's a detective, a captain. He should know stuff that's suspicious, right? How long he been on the force? And then it just took that one lady and he forgot everything. And got
He looked at those legs and he was like, damn.
Yeah. He's like, whoa.
It's like, I need to get some in between those Russian legs. I mean, I need to get help.
Yeah, she looked like a Russian spy. He's like, oh, we need some help. What's going on here?
What's going on? Well, what's up? Oh, there's some car issues? Car engine issues? What's going on here?
Yeah, let me see what's going on with her. What do you think about this, Andrew? She knows my name. What I think about what?
Hopefully y'all get a number at the end of this, even though I'm married.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh, come on, Andrew, get it together.
But Tegger and Rose.
Jesus.
But I definitely like how Axel goes over there. He's actually pretending to be Johnny Wishbone.
Oh my God.
I'm Johnny Wishbone, and I'm a psychic from the island of St. Croix. Yes, I am psychic from the island of St. Croix. And I read in the St. Croix Gazette at the Beverly Hills Police Department having some trouble figuring out crimes. So what I did was come to Beverly Hills to help the police out. They tell me they don't want my help. They don't need my help. So I'm going to go on my merry way. I'm psychic. I'm psychic. Phenomenon. Watch this.
Oh my God. And that guy, like a commissioner, he like, oh, okay. I'm trying to figure out, are people this naive or actually just this good?
I'm Johnny Wishbone. I'm Johnny Wishbone.
Wishbone from St. Croix. That sound made up.
But he does it so well to the point where you can actually believe him, to the point where it's like, okay, I don't need to even ask any questions because we do probably use psychics to find somebody. You know what I'm saying?
What, John? I would like the Axel Foley book of The Power of Persuasion, because he persuaded everybody, even a guy that wasn't a cop, that he a cop. He's like, I ain't no cop. Am I?
And then there's also the other thing that he does too, where he winds up taking over somebody else's house.
Yeah. And then he told the crew, he's like, what y'all doing out here? Get out here. This work got canceled. They like, ain't getting no paperwork. Got canceled. Where it got canceled? Y'all take the day out. Oh, okay. You sure? You sure?
It's the wrong blueprints. It's the wrong blueprints.
Oh, man. Oh, man. I can't believe they sent us the wrong blueprints. What? The whole crew.
You want that living room to be a circle? Everything's going to be a circle in this house.
The whole crew went home like, oh, he said, y'all go home. Go home. And take a week off.
They don't even question why he's even going in the house. They
he just look professional. He had his Detroit Lions Letterman jacket on and a shirt and some jeans.
It's casual Friday, Tamika. It's casual Friday.
What? Oh, they get the wrong blueprints and they like, oh man, I can't believe they sent us the wrong blueprints. Oh, you say you gotta take care of, go home. Somebody clean and mess up. Okay, we'll get somebody to clean it up. Oh my God, I can't.
And then to top that off, he also poses an undercover FBI agent to get past Lutz, who, with the aid of Detective Jeffrey Feldman, Axel soon starts making the connection between the robberies. And then he first finds out that the ammunition fired at one of the robberies was designed by the manager of a gun club owned by Dent. Axel and Bogeman's daughters, Jan, use her connections as an insurance agent to find out about Dent's financial dealings. Dent is robbing his own business and on purpose in order to finance firearms transactions with an arms dealer named Nikos Demopoulos, is dissecting using his henchman Charles Kane as the front man for his operations. Bogomil was not shot because his investigation was on the correct track, was shot because his investigation was on the right track. Mm-hmm. But so I definitely like the whenever he goes into the shooting range and he sees the tall blonde woman shooting.
That's a big bitch.
That's a big bitch right there.
Dang.
And then here's Tigger. Yeah, we have a lot of them around here.
I like this one. That's what I'm saying, John. They got a lot of them. So why? Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I'm just still mad at the doorman of the bank in the first scene.
Rusty. One flock.
Like they got a lot of big, tall, blonde women in California. How you got distracted?
So it's legs. Is that accent?
You're right. That's the first thing he saw was the legs and her opening them to get out of the limo.
Yep.
Okay.
But I definitely like the shooting range part and everything, too. He's like, oh, I like these bullets and I like this gun and everything that you have. Yeah, we'll send it to you. Where's your address? And he gives them the address.
And then he says his name is James something.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He don't even look like a James.
Maybe con artists should join a police force because they seem to get stuff done.
They do. Especially ex-cons that take on bubblegum wrapper to get into somebody else's house.
Yeah. I'm telling you, just hire some con artists. And put them on a police force, you'll get in any place.
Places that you don't want to be at.
Places you don't want to be, they can go.
But no, I just thought that scene was really well put together. I thought I really liked the shooting range. I like the way it looks. It looks as well. And then, you actually feel like, okay, this is actually a place that you don't want to be at. Yeah, it looks like a professional type of shooting range. It doesn't look like an everyday dirty alley kind of shooting club.
Have you been to a shooting range?
You know what I'm talking about? Like on RoboCop. Don't act like you don't know what I'm talking
about. Dirty alley shooting range.
That's hard for me to explain, okay?
Okay, but yeah, that's all right.
It actually feels like it's more professional than it does on RoboCop.
Thank you.
It feels like it's a little bit more put together.
Yes, and very 80s with the blue and white lights or
yeah,
whatever those lights are they always have in the 80s.
Yeah, those little neon lights or whatever they are.
Yes, which does not belong in a shooting range.
No, it doesn't. You're trying to avoid from the cops, but you're going to act like that, you know, the cops are there.
I thought it was a club at first. I was like, oh, snap, look at that club.
Yes. Yeah, just thought that was actually pretty interesting that, you know, Axel runs into Jan again, and she winds up posing as an insurance person to try and get him into this shooting range. What do you think about seeing her again?
This is a daughter, right?
Oh, this is just a friend.
No, Jan, that's not the daughter? Who is the daughter?
Yeah, that's Bully Wynn's daughter. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I'm thinking of something else.
Oh, I know what you're thinking about, though. She does look like the other woman from Barricade 1.
Right, where he gets thrown out the window. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wish she would have came back in this one. Because she had
more sense.
Personality than this girl.
I agree. I mean, there's just something about this character. I understand that she's there to play the daughter role. Mm-hmm. But I think it would have been better off as...
Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
¡Wow! Gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam! ¡Mua!
Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
Is her just sitting by her dad's side?
Yes.
Being there for her dad? Mm-hmm. Versus helping Axel. I think it would have made more sense of like, wait, I have another contact in Beverly Hills. Let me go on ahead and make another phone call and see if one of my friends can help me out with this one, just like how she did with the last case at work.
Yeah, because she probably knows Beverly Hills. Yeah.
Right. That would have made more sense to me.
Yeah.
Than having Google Mails.
Really have chemistry for two people that know each other. Because when he came in her house, she was like, freeze. And then he was like... Then he's like, damn it, Axel. I was like,
She was definitely one-dimensional. There was like nothing to her other than her getting up to that point of just calling up and pretending to be an insurance agent. And that's it.
Yeah, and I still wouldn't have believed if she called me. I'd be like, who is this?
So having pulled a robbery attempt at a bank depot, Axel is able to trick Dent's account in Sydney, Brinston, into using a computer and discovers that Dent and Carla are planning to leave the country. Axel also learns that Jan that all of Dent's businesses have had their insurance coverage canceled and are about to go bankrupt except his racetrack, which he is convinced is the next target. On the way to the track, Axel solves the latest riddle sent to the police and is convinced that the riddle was made easily solvable in order to implicate Kane as the alphabet bandit. However, Axel knows Kane as a pasty designed to throw the authorities off Dent's trail. So what do you think of that?
That riddle was silly.
To be honest with you, it's like an easy riddle. I mean, Jim Carrey did a better job at doing riddles when he played the Riddler.
Yes. And go a step further, the Batman did an incredible job at riddles because I was still like, what'd that mean?
Right. That's what I thought so too. I thought that the riddles itself wasn't as entertaining as I was hoping it would have been for it to be an alphabet. This is like having like a 10-year-old write down a riddle and hoping that the police department will be able to figure it out.
Yeah, because he said whoever wrote this wanted the police to figure it out. And I'm like, well, why would you want the police to figure it out? You're the killer, right? I don't understand. It's like the opposite of what you're supposed to do.
Exactly. But I just don't... The riddles to me wasn't even that great. If you think about it, I wonder if it's because of the fact that they wanted them to find the riddle and know what the riddle is maybe that's why. But yeah. do you feel like maybe that's why we don't really feel like the riddle was too hard?
I feel like the riddle was an afterthought because they were so focused on getting the story together. And they were like, let's put some riddle in there or something about his middle name, blah, 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 Chang's, whatever. Make it clever. And it is kind of, it was kind of felt like it was inserted in at the last minute.
Right.
To get the story going.
So after that, I that's the only thing that I have to say that was negative for me going to watching this again was just the riddle was just a little too easy and too little on the nose.
Yes, I think Axel and, you know, Rosewood and Taggart, they're comedy gold, you know, and everybody else is good. And Axel's police chief is always good. He's like, bullshit.
Man, I'm going to color my ass.
In my office, you know, stuff like that. And you're like, oh, man, I missed that guy. But like I said, I think the police chief's daughter, it kind of drug the story down a little bit for me.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some of the criminals drug it down a little bit for me, too. It was kind of like, oh, okay. Like, the plot was kind of weird. Where the alphabet killers, A, on a letter envelope. I was like, okay, this, I mean, they're dressed, it doesn't match how they're dressed. They're dressed like professional criminals, but they're doing elementary school cutting out numbers and letters and putting it on a letter envelope, codes. Okay. And they're like these upscale criminals. It just doesn't make sense to me. It seems like there should have been something else to call them, like the upscale bandits or something. I don't know.
Either that or just lose the bandits part and just let them be killers. Just let them be someone that that are just killers without having to have all that.
Yeah. Oh, wait. What was their motive again?
Rosewood is... Oh, tacos. Says, Rosewood is good in the first one, but he is just unhinged in this one. With all the huge guns and his turtle it's so good.
Big animal.
Yep. Because remember, he goes, do turtles have dicks?
You have a dick, don't you, big animal? You know where yours is. I'm like, yeah, Rosewood was like Terminator. He was like, here and here.
Especially with him having the two shotguns at the end and then having that bazooka at the end of the movie, though, too.
Yeah, Taggart was like, Rosewood, we got to talk.
Right? He goes, when did you turn into Rambo?
Yeah, he Rambo and he takes care of his plants and animals. That's all.
The riddle was made easily solvable in order to implicate the cane. Okay, so we talked about that. Axel knows cane is passive design. Okay. The three arrive too late to stop the robbery and find King's body among those killed. While Lutz announced publicly that the alphabet crimes have been solved, Axel notices some red mud at the stables, which leads him, Taggart and Rosewood, to Dent's oil field, where Dent is making his final arms deal with Homonopolis. The three get into a shootout with everyone involved. In the deal, Dent confronts Axel on a warehouse, but Axel gets distracted by one of Dent's henchmen on the roof above him, and Dent gets away. Dent then crashes through the wall in his car, and Axel shoots Dent through the windshield, sending his car down a hill and erupting in flames. After running Axel over, Carla appears and is about to kill Axel, but is shot dead by Taggart. But before that, we actually have another thing that actually happens where they're at the Playboy Mansion. Remember that? Where there's actually this other scene that gets played out with the police chase.
Yeah. And then once again. He was like, hey, I'm here to clean the pool. The pool's already been cleaned.
Remember this, though? Rosewood takes the cement truck and he's playing GTA, basically. Wow. Hanging at everybody.
Probably living his best life in Beverly Hills Cops 2.
This is peak Rosewood. Yeah. Anthony Freeman Taco. This is where he's actually unhinged, where basically he's trying to be like Axel, and even Axel's actually asking him this, because where's your brakes at? I don't know. And he's just
enjoy the ride.
Right.
Who are these
brakes? And the way he turns the cement truck, I thought it was going to turn over.
This man's just living his best like Rosewood on chain. That's all that is.
Yep. Then you finally get up to the Playboy Mansion because Max and all them are over there.
Yeah.
And like you said, going ahead and talk about, and then of course this is where we see a very young Chris Rock.
Yes.
Goes, what the hell are you doing? He goes, look, I park cars. I park trucks. I can't, what the fuck do you want me to do with this?
Went to the receptionist. I don't like as a receptionist at the Playboy Mansion, but okay. He went to the receptionist and was like, hey, you know, I'm here to clean the pool. She's like, the pool's already been cleaned. And he was like, well, they called me because the pool needs to be cleaned again. You want me to spell it out to the sun floating in the pool?
And these are the health inspectors to make sure that I actually get my job done.
Yes. And she was like, okay. I was like, no, not again.
I'm just going to say this. Axel is a Jedi.
Yes. Yes. He can say, he can talk his way out of anything, and he can say anything. Especially the first movie, he was just unhinged.
Right.
Like, girl, you told him the pool was already clean.
But yet you're going to believe that there's actually a turd floating up in the pool.
Okay. Go ahead.
And then there's also this other part that I thought that was really funny, though, too, is when finally they get into the back where the party is. Mm-hmm. And they're seeing all these girls. And then he looks down at his dick. He goes, wake up. Wake up. Yeah. This is going to be your first. The last time they ever going to see this.
Yes. Yeah.
This is what we're talking about.
Where do we find the guy? He's like, follow your dick. I was like, what? Oh, God.
And then this is, of course, where he confronts Max and Hugh Hefner's there, very young Hugh Hefner. He goes, Hugh, you're here. Of course he would be there, Axel.
It's his house. Yeah.
Right. Man, I cannot tell you how many times I have your magazine in my bathroom. It's an honor. And then he goes, look, by the way, this is Max. Max sells drugs. This is his other dude. He actually sells weapons. Mm-hmm. And he shoots cops.
Yes.
Everybody, you, this is them.
Yes.
And he goes, well, I don't know any of them and I don't know you, but you already overstated your welcome. And he goes, in other words, Max, get your ass and get out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, and then I like how Axe pulls around and he goes, okay, everybody, party's over. Max fucked it up for everybody.
Oh my God. Can I say, if I was a criminal, I would hate for Axel to be on my tail. He embarrasses all of them. The first one, he embarrassed that man at the country club.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I forgot the guy's name. He was like, hey, what's up, man? I'm like, I can't get rid of this guy. How he found me? I'm trying to chill at the Playboy Mansion and he out there got me kicked out. I would just hate him being on my tail. I just can't.
But yeah, I like how he just says, he appreciates it, Max, but take your ass home. Well done, you're welcome. But it's been real. It's been nice. Everybody, party's over. Max fucked that up for everybody. But I don't know. There's just something about that line of that delivery that makes me laugh every time I hear it. This is why we can't have nice things. But
yeah. Yeah. And that's our new thing. We said, Max done fucked it up for everybody.
Everybody. But after that winds up happening, then we have that scene that I told you about where basically they show up late to stop of the three arrive to too late to stop the robbery.
Yeah.
And find Kane's body among those killed. While Lutz announces police that the alphabet crimes have been solved, Axel notices some red mud at the stables, which leads Taggart and Rosewood to a dense oil field. So what do you think about the action sequences for that? And also, too, I have something to say about birds in dark.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I thought the action sequences were really good. Of course, there's explosions because it's Jerry
Bruckheimer.
Bruckheimer.
He was actually Michael Bay at the time. He was the Michael Bay of the 80s.
Yes. Yes. So there was an explosion. So I kind of expected that from him.
But I like how Rosewood is like, he reminds me of Pauly Shore in the Army Now with the RPG. He's like, ooh. And he opens it up and he starts reading the directions on it. And Taggart's like, Rosewood, get your ass up. They're moving up. They're getting away. Rosewood goes on ahead, takes the bazooka, and shoots it at the truck. And it winds up getting destroyed on an accident.
Can I say all those movies from the 80s with bazookas, they made it look so easy. And I probably know in real life that it's much harder to shoot a bazooka besides just pick it up and then shoot.
They make it look like it's like lightweight. That thing is heavy as hell.
And it's always loaded. I've never seen anybody with an unloaded US bazooka.
Battery, okay. Our stuff comes fully loaded even when you pick it up.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Pick it up and shoot.
That's it. And hold it to create something.
Yeah, only direction. Pick it up and shoot.
God. But I thought that the action sequences were really good. I really loved the... I thought it was really entertaining, especially when Rosewood is just shooting up everybody and having the bazooka. Then he has, like, the two shotguns. He's just going to town with this. He's just having the best time. He's having the best year of his life. Wait.
He is. He is.
He played a little GTA before GTA was cool.
Yeah. He. This is something that's been suppressed for years. And then Axel came into his life and just released him from all his inhibitions. And now he's just shooting people with bazookas. And he got an arsenal with Big Al in the house.
Then confronts, yeah. And then. Big Al winds up getting shot. Then
wait, also, what? Yeah. The turtle?
No.
The turtle.
I'm making a sign up story. I'm sorry about that. But no.
I was like, Daddy, how the turtle got shot when he did.
But I thought the warehouse scene was really good. And then and you get this, everything was not dark or anything like that. You were able to see everything inside there. But yeah, and then you have Dent that crashes through the wall in the car and Axel shoots Dent through the windshield, sending his car down a hill and then erupting in flames. And after running Axel over, Carla appears and is about to kill Axel, but is shot dead by Taggart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pure 80s action. A car always goes over the edge and it explodes.
And then you also have birds, the pigeons inside the warehouse for no reason to make it a more of a dramatic effect.
Hey, that's Face Off now. That's Face
no,
Off.
No, that's Doves. They had Doves, I think.
Oh, okay.
I want to say they had Doves. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
But if that was directed by John Woo, yeah, we would actually have more of a...
Don't tell John Woo that I said he had pigeons.
But I just found it a little bit comical of, okay, we have this dark scene in this little small space. Let's put pigeons in it. Let them fly. And they can barely fly in the container or anything like that. You can see them flying, try to fly, and then just like, and then they fall.
Yeah, that's what pigeons do. Boom. Release the pigeons for this scene. Action. Woo.
And they don't even, like I said, it would have been good if they had like more of an open space.
Yeah.
That isn't like a closed space and it doesn't work for the dramatic effect that they're trying to have it for.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a little.
Go, pigeons, go. Go, pigeons, go. Woo. That's all we
But just as the last of the criminals are about to flee, the police arrive upon the scene, arresting the remainder of Vince Men and Topolopoulos. After Lutz and Mayor Egan arrive and influence Lutz, tries to fire Rosewood and Taggart for their instruction, and also tries to arrest Axel. However, both Taggart and Rosewood stand up to Lutz this time and prove that Dent was the real Alphabet Bandit and that the Alphabet crime were about an arms deal. They are also able to convince Mayor Egan of Lutz's incompetence, as Lutz would have interfered if he had known about their activities, as he intentionally ignores the truth from the other cops. And Mayor Egan personally fires Lutz because he is tired of abusive attitude towards the his own men and for jeopardizing the investigation. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that when you look at Lutz, it's a paint by the numbers kind of thing, especially in the 80s. You know that this guy's corrupt. Mm-hmm. And yes, he wants to kiss the mayor's ass, but at the same time, though, you can tell that this guy is probably on somebody else's payroll.
Yeah.
Just the way he acts and stuff like that is, it's an 80s trope that we see over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
probably saw it too in Lethal Weapon.
I think we did. I have to go back and rewatch it. But also too, Axel also winds up pretending to be an FBI, working for the FBI, because remember, he got his friend to call up the chief captain to tell him to say that he needed him for an interview and to meet him at another office.
Yeah.
And so he winds up taking over whenever the other police captain, when Lutz winds up calling the Detroit Police Department, and he winds up telling him that Axel's been deep undercover.
Yeah. And then the real police captain, like, what the hell are you doing in my office? Just like that, in that exact tone. I'm not fabricating.
Like, he's a father figure to this guy, right? Yeah. It's like he got caught by his dad. What are you doing in this office?
This ain't my office. The hell are you? Right, this ain't your office. I love the guy. I love him.
You too. I love him. And the funny thing is, he's actually a real police officer at too. So.
Are you serious?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
Oh, no.
Yeah, he was really a police officer at one time.
Yeah, I'm sure he's not acting.
No, he's not acting. He's actually remembering all the times that those guys pissed him off.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Then Mayor Egan chooses Bogomil to replace Lutz as the new police chief. Axel returns to Detroit, but not before he gets chewed up by Inspector Todd over the phone after Egan called Todd to congratulate him on allowing Axel to assist them on this case. So I said it was a 6.5 nostalgically coming into it. I'm going to have to go with I'm going to go with a 7.
Okay, that's fair.
What about for you?
Yeah, that seemed about fair, 7. It could have been a little bit better, but also the first movie set such a high bar.
It really does, if you think about it.
Second movies, they have a lot to live up to. Sometimes they're better than the first, sometimes they're not. So
that's true. And I thought that now let me ask you this.
Okay.
What would you give the first one for non-nostalgically for stripping away nostalgia?
Oh, strip. Well, dang, that's just.
Well, how about it? Nostalgically?
I give it a 9, but I'm trying my best not to have nostalgia. But like I said, I'm watching it for the first time sitting through as an adult. Like, I've known about Beverly Hills Cop as a kid, but I couldn't sit and watch it.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was able to watch just about anything. But that's just me.
I'm jealous.
That's just white parenting. I don't know. But
I wish I had white. No, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking.
But anywho, but I had fun watching this. I had fun rewatching this movie. I thought it was really good. I still think some of this holds up. Some of it doesn't. Some of it has little parts that I feel like they could have expanded on and or do without. But I had fun. I had fun rewatching it. It's just a fun movie just to laugh your ass off for an hour.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. So 48 hours. That's a movie, right?
Yeah, 48 hours, and there's another 48 hours.
In that one with Nick
Nolte? Yep.
Did this come out around the same time? Because they both seem like they're similar.
They're similar, but a little different in a sense, because you're dealing with, here's the thing. You have the Rosewood and Taggart chemistry, right?
Yeah.
But Foley is pretty much by himself, so he doesn't really have buddy cops until he gets into Beverly Hills.
Okay.
That makes sense. So, you know, let me take a look at something, too, because you raise a very interesting point as well. Because, okay, so you have Beverly Hills. Okay, I know that they had another 48 hours in 1990, which is the sequel to 48 Hours. That's in 1990.
Oh, yeah. When did the first 48 Hours come out?
So 48 Hours actually came out in 82.
Okay.
And so
Cop 1 came out in what?
84. So 2 years later, you have Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, because I see what you mean. Like, there are slight differences, but they both were kind of not made, but they came out kind of around the same time. Right. So Andy was doing double duty.
Right. Just coming up, basically just playing almost close to the same character, but maybe a little bit different.
Yeah.
Because remember this, in the first one, his friend dies. And he's linked up to Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
So that's, if it wasn't for that connection in the first one, you know, we wouldn't have been, wouldn't have gone even into Beverly Hills. If his friend wouldn't have died in the first one.
Yeah. And then 48 Hours was, what was that again? I have to see it.
I haven't seen 48 Hours. Get this. I'm like you, though, when it comes down to Beverly Hills Cop movies. I've seen certain small clip outs. I don't remember it. It's like a fog in my mind.
Yes.
I remember seeing a little small clip, and that was it. It was like there, and then it's like, it's gone. Same thing with another 48 Hours. I've seen it. Once, didn't see it all the way through.
Yeah.
It's just for me, I never really went back and try to watch them.
Yes, I think we should put that on the list.
So we will
compare that to Beverly Hills Cop, because it seems like they both kind of coincide.
With each
other. Yeah. Right.
Okay. But yeah, that's everything as far as this, then the review goes. Like, get this, Paramount Pictures had planned a television series based on the first film. Eddie refused to a series, but was willing to do a sequel. Producers Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer hired Tony Scott to direct due to his success with the 1986 blockbuster Top Gun. The film was originally to be set and filmed in London and Paris. However, the script was rewritten after Eddie Murphy expressed a refluence to film outside of the United States.
Huh.
And then the soundtrack has Bob Seger's Shakedown. You also have Pointer Sisters' Be There. You have Charlie Sexton and Deep. You have Corey Hart, Hold On. George Michael, I Want Your Sex.
Oh, sorry.
James Ingram, For Better Way. You also have Pebbles, Love, Hate. And then you also have the Jets, Cross My Broken Heart, Ready for the World by 36 Lovers, I Can't, Sue Ann, I Can't Stand It, and All Revved Up by Jeremiah Jackson.
Yeah, because I like the intro. Well, you know, the intro to Beverly Hills Cop 2, they had that song. And it's catchy. It's like, shake down, shake down, da da da. And that's all I can say. Because they were
right.
You're busted.
But get this, though. In 1987, it was become the most box office yet the one of the most anticipated films of 1987 and became a box office success upon release, despite not making as much as Beverly Hills Cop. The film debuted at number one, earning $33 million on its opening weekend, a sales mark that would result in the beginning of the year's highest opening weekend debut. Beverly Hills Cop 2 made approximately $153,665,036, becoming the third biggest hit domestically at the box office that year, after Fatal Attraction and Three Men and a Baby.
And the second most highest. Once you get a taste of Axel Foley, you just need more.
Yeah. And that's why they followed up with Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Yeah, that was a bit of a struggle bus for me, but we'll talk about it.
I can't wait to dive into that one. Because I haven't seen it in a long time, and it holds up nostalgically for me.
Yeah.
But I wonder what it's going to be like for me, for my non-nostalgic.
Yeah, maybe you should see
it myself
as an adult. Because I like something.
Yeah, that came out in 94.
The first two had something's lacking with this one. That's how I feel.
Wondering if we'll get into it. We'll get into it with the third.
Sure.
I mean, yeah.
Comments.
But yeah, that's gonna be it as far as this show goes. Thank you, Rossi, for commenting in the comments section. I do appreciate that. Thank you to Taco as well. Also, too, I just want to point this out. 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time. I will be back here again to do our Pulp Fiction review with Rossi and her friend Kim. So you might want to join us for that one. That's going to be it as far as this review goes. But I hope you guys enjoyed it. And remember, don't be a Max, because Max fucks shit up. So always until next time. Bye-bye.
Unless you're HBO Max.
Yeah. And well, I wouldn't put it that far, because then you have Zoloft that's actually telling people what to do. Bye, guys.
Es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
¡Wow! Gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam! ¡Mua!
Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.